Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where performance is driven by original fundamental research on a global scale. This is Putnam Today. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The Obama administration threw in the towel. The president said yes to extending those Bush-era tax cuts, but just for 2 years, even for the rich, in exchange for avoiding tax increases on the rest of us.
I'm not willing to let working families across this country become collateral damage for political warfare here in Washington.
It's a truce until the next presidential election. Never mind the effects on the deficit. This two-year extension may not be so much an economic matter as a political one. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information available at progressive.com. And by Constellation Energy, committed to customer choice and powering America's clean energy future through investments in natural gas, nuclear, wind, solar, and efficiency technologies.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ryssdal. We're 6 days into December. Thanks for making us a part of your Monday. President Obama announced a deal with Republicans tonight. He agreed to extend the Bush-era tax cuts for 2 more years, so the GOP didn't end up forcing a tax increase on all income levels if those tax cuts weren't extended for the rich. In return, Republicans agreed to extend jobless benefits an additional 13 months. The deal, though, still has to be approved by the House and Senate. There was some interesting strategy behind the horse trading, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
The deal reached today means the tax cuts will expire smack dab in the middle of the 2012 presidential election. Congress will have to grapple with the issue again. James Thurber teaches political science at American University in Washington. He says Republicans and Democrats are already sharpening the arguments they'd make during the campaign.
The Democrats will claim that the Republicans want to give tax cuts to the very wealthy, and the Republicans will say that the Democrats will want to raise taxes and spend money yet again.
Thurber says if the economy hasn't improved by 2012, the Republican argument will carry the day. But some Democrats think their tax cuts for the rich position will win no matter what. They relish a tax cut smackdown in the middle of the election. Paul Light teaches public service at New York University. He says that would be quite a gamble because voters hate tax increases for anyone.
The American public hears the word tax increase, and that's the only thing they have to hear.
Light says if he were advising the president, he'd say put off the debate, extend the cuts for 3 years, so they expire well after the presidential election. Teddy Downey is a policy analyst at MF Global. He says some Democrats did make that argument.
There's also a range of conservative Democrats and moderate Democrats that don't just want this issue to go away and don't want to discuss it in an election year.
But moderates haven't been getting their way in Washington for a while now. Both parties have become more partisan, leaning further left and right. So brace yourself for an election year dust-up in Washington. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
What could be the biggest free trade deal since NAFTA was reached over the weekend by U.S. and South Korean negotiators? The Obama administration says the plan will increase U.S. exports by billions of dollars and support tens of thousands of U.S. jobs. And it could have implications beyond economics. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
The Obama administration is touting the deal as a good thing for the U.S. economy.
It's a huge victory. This agreement is all about jobs.
Ambassador Dimitrios Marantas is the deputy U.S. trade representative.
It will allow us to expand our exports in a way that will create good-paying jobs for American workers throughout the country.
The free trade agreement would lower tariffs for some U.S. exports, which will be good for automakers like Ford. Doug Irwin is a professor of economics at Dartmouth College. He expects Congress will ratify the deal next year. It will be easier, he says, now that Democrats have less influence.
The sort of bad aftertaste of NAFTA still poisons the political environment. And with Republicans being more supportive of trade in general, this is one reason, I think, why the Obama administration has chosen this time to start moving on trade.
South Korea is also expected to ratify the agreement, despite the objections of some politicians and business interests. Marcus Noland is deputy director at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He says South Korea sees a chance to lock in duty-free access to the U.S. market.
From their standpoint, It's less about gaining marginally better terms and more about essentially getting an insurance policy against potential U.S. protectionism in the future.
The deal also has big political implications. Coming after North Korea shelled South Korea, killing several civilians, the trade pact signals the enduring alliance between the U.S. and South Korea. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
You know what they say about getting over a broken heart, even a $6 billion one? Move on to something else. That's rarely a problem for Google, so Groupon? Groupon who? Yeah, the search giant's big bid for the coupon site was rebuffed, but today Google moved to conquer another market. It began selling digital books. The search giant is now taking on pros like Amazon, Apple, and Barnes & Noble for a share of the estimated $1 billion ebook market. As Janet Babin reports, the rivalry could turn out to be a real page-turner.
For years now, Google has made classics like War and Peace available online for free. Today, it began selling 3 million popular book titles like James Patterson's Crossfire and Happy Ever After from Nora Roberts at Google eBooks. The site is cloud-based or open. That means you don't need a special gadget to read your books. You can access them from any device that has a web browser, like your smartphone or your iPad. Forrester research analyst James McQuibby says ebook sellers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble can do that too.
People are not going to notice the difference between Google's strategy and an Amazon Kindle strategy because Amazon's technically available on every device that Google is.
Independent booksellers are thrilled with Google's ebook site. It'll let indies sell ebooks through a link to Google and pick up about 30% of the sale. Tom Campbell co-owns the Regulator Bookshop in Durham, North Carolina.
This is a portion of our market that we have just lost previously, maybe 20% or so of our market. We haven't been able to interact with it, and now we can do that.
Some analysts are flummoxed by Google's latest venture. Roger Kay at Endpoint Technologies says Google has a bad habit of competing with its own customers.
They're alienating some companies who were formerly partners in order to get into a business that it's not at all sure that they're going to actually be able to make money at.
There's no advertising on Google's ebook site just yet, but one day analysts say ads could start showing up as you search for books and even as you turn the page. In New York, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Seems Wall Street was a little mixed up today. Details when we do the numbers. A second week of climate talks kicked off today in Cancun, Mexico. Host President Felipe Calderon voiced hope the outcome will put to rest what he called the false dichotomy that dealing with climate change conflicts with economic growth. He insisted it's not just possible to battle global warming without harming the economy. It's good business. There's no small irony in where all this talk about climate change is taking place. Mexico, and Cancun in particular, have a direct interest in these meetings. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troll reports.
Behind closed doors, international negotiators pore over arcane details on how to curb climate change. That happens in a posh resort miles away from the center of Cancun. But closer to the city, the Cancun Climate Village draws crowds of locals. Think of it as a state fair on climate change. Big tents hold art and science exhibits. Bands play every night. Locals can learn about electric cars or energy-efficient appliances. 14-year-old Elena Roca is catching her favorite pop star.
Elefante.
And he's why she's here. Though she says she does hear a lot about climate change living in Mexico.
Everywhere. Everybody talks about it.
And she's happy to play a computer game about saving ecosystems.
It's pretty cool.
Nearby, younger kids sort fake trash into recycling bins.
Separar la basura orgánica, la plástico, cartón, metales.
Environmentalism is a hard sell in Cancun, where sprawling resorts and water-sucking golf courses dominate the landscape and the economy. But the government is trying to spruce up its image for this global conference. It built a wind turbine and installed solar panels to help power the convention. And when convention-goers take the long bus rides to and from meetings, some of those buses are eco-friendly, says transportation coordinator Lorenzo Ruiz.
They are working with a 100% biodiesel, so it's working really good.
But there are only so many buses that run on biodiesel in Mexico. So to save gas on the regular buses, Ruiz cuts back on service during downtime at the convention. But he says no one's complimented him on his ingenuity.
They only ask what time the bus leaves.
It's easy to dismiss these efforts in Cancun as a sideshow. But Mexico is a leader on climate issues. The government is close to passing a national law on carbon emissions. And Mexican politicians are competing for the accolades. Jake Schmidt is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He says Mexico knows it's vulnerable to rising sea levels and shortages of food and water.
There's a strong domestic reason for them to take action.
The country has made big investments in solar, wind, and other renewable energy projects, and that's brought money from European companies for more projects. The United Nations lets European firms count these investments in Mexico against their pollution at home. Schmidt from the Natural Resources Defense Council says the more Mexico puts into efforts to fight climate change, the more it attracts funding from abroad.
Countries that come forward with the greatest level of emission reductions, the greatest commitment to action, will likely get the most amount of money.
But it's the Kyoto Treaty on Climate Change that makes this investment possible. And renewing that treaty is on shaky ground at the UN talks here this week. That uncertainty could limit Mexico's ability to get a good return on the climate change investments it's already made. In Cancun, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
It's one thing to have the toner run out and have to run a whole batch of copies all over again, but when the government makes a printing error, it adds up to real money. The Treasury was all set to roll out a new high-tech $100 bill 2 months from now, but the plans are on hold because of an unforeseen wrinkle. Literally. Apparently, all of the added holograms and ribbons cause the paper to fold, leaving blank spots. Not only will it take time to sort through 1.1 billion bills, it could cost a mint. Here's Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith.
The new $100 bill was unveiled earlier this year to great fanfare, including a video showcasing new high security features like a security strip woven into the bill and multicolored holograms.
Yeah, they have a lot of new, very good new devices in there. A little gaudy, but it is effective, yes.
That's currency expert Dennis Forg. He says creases are always a problem when currency is being printed, but not on this scale. The government's printed $110 billion worth of the new money, and it's estimated up to a third of it is flawed.
It has to be some of the bells and whistles that cause it getting caught in the presses or something.
A government official told Marketplace it's unclear what's causing the problem. At 12 cents a piece, the bills have already cost the government more than $120 million. And it's a bad time for the problem, says University of Florida criminology expert Richard Hollinger.
Retailers are really struggling with, you know, this influx of counterfeit bills.
Forgeries spike when the economy's bad, and the C-note is the most counterfeited U.S. bill. Hollinger says the dollar doesn't have transparent windows and other features that make foreign currencies harder to fake.
People are bleaching out $1 bills and then overprinting $100 bills on top of them just using regular inkjet printers. I've got one in my wallet that's really quite good.
Separating out the bad bills by hand could take decades. The government says it's working on a speedier solution. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And later, could a cut in housing subsidies change the ethnic landscape of London?
Critics of the caps say it will turn London into a city like Paris, where the poor, most of them immigrants, are banished to the outskirts.
But first, let's do the numbers. Wall Street was wishy-washy today as investors kept an eye on the European debt crisis and sifted through Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's remarks last night on 60 Minutes. The Dow Jones Industrial Average trimmed 19 points, or one-tenth of 1%, to end at 11,362. The Nasdaq picked up 3 points, or one-tenth percent, to finish at 2594. The S&P 500 lost 1 point, a tenth of 1%, to close at 1223. Financial stocks wilted. Rumors are circulating that some big banks might be downgraded by credit ratings agencies early next year. Bank of America shed 1.8%. Morgan Stanley gave up a third of 1%. Walmart lost 0.25% today after the Supreme Court said it would hear a case involving discrimination against female workers. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price, understanding the connections of a complex global economy. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. By Meritas, a worldwide alliance of law firms committed to helping business owners and in-house counsel find local, pre-qualified legal counsel for over 20 years. Meritas.org. And by Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com. Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. It's the 69th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. In Washington, the Federal Reserve is scheduled to release consumer credit data for October. And jet setters might want to know that tomorrow is International Civil Aviation Day, an official United Nations observance celebrating global cooperation on aviation safety. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ryssdal. We mentioned last week that the Kardashian sisters, famous for being famous on their own reality TV show, abruptly withdrew their name from a new prepaid debit card that was aimed at their fans. But that wasn't the end of the outcry from critics who complained banks are still pushing lots of reloadable celebrity cards with a long list of what they label predatory fees. More than 30 new debit cards for teens have been unveiled in the past week. A card tied to the popular Twilight movie franchise has been out for a while now, and pro surfer Jodi Nelson has been promoting her card on YouTube for the past year.
Another thing that I just love about these cards is it's a great way for you guys to learn how to manage your money and how to budget, and it's a great way for your parents and you guys to get on the same page.
Marketers claim they're just giving teens a card that feels like plastic, acts like cash. Well, with the possible exception that every month you'll pay $5 for the privilege, and every time you reload it, it'll cost you $5 for that, too. Make an ATM withdrawal $1.50. Let your card sit idle too long, you'll be dinged $1.95. And subtract $15 to dispute any transaction. Well, you can talk live to customer service, and that's free. For the first 3 minutes, anyway. So what's the deal here? Not a good deal at all, warns Connecticut's Democratic Attorney General and soon-to-be U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. He's on the line with us now. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
So you have called some of these prepaid debit cards predatory. Why?
They are predatory because of the outrageous rates that are charged. Rates for starting the card, activating it, for canceling it, for inquiring of the call center, opening ATM accounts and withdrawing from them, really just an almost endless series of rates that swallow the value of the card even before it can be used. In fact, anybody using this prepaid debit card really loses before they use it.
A lot of these card issuers are making no secret of the market they're going after. They're calling them teen prepaid cards. What about that, the fact that they're directing them at the younger audience, and why?
The reason that this kind of marketing pitch is so suspect is that it really targets young people who may be at a time in their lives or a time of consciousness when they are particularly susceptible to overspending, more extravagance than they can really afford, and more debt than they can possibly and responsibly incur. So the point here is that the marketing pitches, which play upon teaching smart money practices, may actually work to inculcate the opposite, that is, overspending, excessive debt, and irresponsible use of credit cards.
Mr. Attorney General, you say just open a bank account and you can learn responsible finance that way. But what about the convenience and the security of these cards and the fact that we live in a plastic world? You can almost not buy anything without having a credit card these days.
Ultimately, the responsibility is borne by the companies and the managements that profit, that use these prepaid debit cards as a revenue source. And they may be very important in a plastic world, so to speak, but plastic itself need not be as costly as these predatory fees make it.
Who makes the money from all these fees? At the bottom of the website here, it says that it's through a license with MasterCard International.
We have not yet sorted out, but our investigation is continuing, who actually profits and how much by all of these fees, but certainly everyone shares in the revenue.
Do you think that this is going to require some sort of legislative fix?
There may be a need for legislative reform even more than has been done already through the Credit Card Reform Act if these kinds of abusive and predatory fees become commonplace. And hopefully one of the effects of the Kardashian card experience will be to convince the industry that it ought to set a model for better behavior.
Richard Blumenthal is the Attorney General from the state of Connecticut. Thank you very much for joining us, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
We put in a call to the Iowa-based bank behind the My Plash cards, MetaBank. The bank said it had no direct comment, but did point us to an industry study suggesting that fees for prepaid debit cards are competitive, if not better, than checking account costs. We all know housing prices have fallen in the past few years, but even now, accommodation doesn't come cheap, especially in some hot spots, New York and L.A., for example. It's the same in Britain. London is one of the world's most expensive cities. So when the government recently announced plans to cap subsidies for people on welfare to help control the huge national deficit, there was an outcry. Critics worry it could destroy London's diverse social fabric. From Islington in North London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
This is one of London's more fashionable and expensive districts, but like many parts of this city, there are poor as well as rich people here. Patricia Radcliffe is poor, a single mother with five children. She rents a house here with the help of government housing benefit. She's very worried about the looming benefit cuts.
Well, to me, it's like they want me to put myself in debt and then maybe to see me and my family on the street.
She won't be on the street, but the new cap on housing benefit means she may have to move to a cheaper district.
I would love to find somewhere cheaper, but not far too far because of my kids, like going to school and they have their friends around here.
She'd be lucky. The new housing benefit cap, $640 a week, means that she may well have to uproot herself and move far away from the centre of the city. The same could happen to thousands of poor households in the capital.
It's BBC London 94.9.
Vanessa Feltz.
On this radio phone-in show, the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, vowed to fight what he called social cleansing.
We will not accept any kind of Kosovo-style, you know, social cleansing of London. You are not going to see, on my watch, thousands of families being evicted from the place where they've been living and where they have put down roots.
Boris is famous for his vivid imagery, but Kosovo, evoking the Balkan War in which thousands of people were driven out of their villages because of their ethnicity, isn't that a bit over the top? I went to meet someone who should know.
OK, well, this is our office. It's one of our offices. We got two of them.
Buya Hagia is a Kosovan who was ethnically cleansed by the Serbs and came to Britain as a refugee. He now owns this letting agency in North London and has a wide range of properties for rent.
Do you have any properties on your books that somebody could afford with the new housing benefit?
No.
None at all?
None at all.
Buya says the new $650 a week cap on housing benefit will cause a major upheaval.
People are going to move on out and they're going to have to search for cheaper properties and it's going to have to be out of London, because in the London area it's going to be very difficult to live.
Would you describe this as Kosovo-style cleansing?
I could say yes. Yes, I could call it as a social ethnic cleansing.
Without the bloodshed?
Of course.
Critics of the caps say it will turn London into a city like Paris, where the poor, most of them immigrants, are banished to the outskirts, and only the rich can live in the centre.
These are difficult changes, but I think this is... I think this is right.
But Prime Minister David Cameron has been fighting back in the House of Commons. He says he must cut the cost of a benefit that's spiralling out of control.
Are we happy to go on paying housing benefit of £30,000, £40,000, £50,000?
The total cost of this benefit jumped by 50% over the past 5 years to more than $35 billion, reflecting the huge boom in London property prices. And that, says Cameron, has priced many ordinary working people who are not on benefits out of the central London rental market.
Our constituents working hard to give benefits so people can live in homes they couldn't even dream of.
And certainly these commuters who can't afford to live in central London support the benefit cap.
Of course, I'd love to live in the nicer areas of London, but because I have to live within my means, I can't do that.
No, I think it's right to cut the benefits. The likes of you and I maybe wouldn't be able to afford to live in these sort of places, and yet they're being housed at taxpayers' expense.
The government is pressing ahead with the cut in housing benefit, dismissing what it calls the hysterical claims that it will ruin the social fabric of the capital. London, said a government spokesman, is always in a state of flux. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the all-new Chevrolet Volt, available soon in select markets. Details at chevyvolt.com. The all-new Chevrolet Volt, it's more car than electric. By Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Putnam Investments, offering total return strategies designed to match your goals. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
A final note, aren't those GPS locators a wonderful invention? Lose your way and you can quickly find yourself again. But what if the boss uses a GPS device to keep track of your every move on the job? A worker for the New York State Labor Department ended up being fired after investigators tracked him by GPS to show he was falsifying his timesheets. Now the New York Civil Liberties Union is suing to have that action overturned. It argues use of the tracking device was intrusive and unconstitutional. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow trimmed 19 points, or 0.1%. The Nasdaq picked up 3 points, or 0.1%. The S&P 500 lost 1 point, 0.1%. Our producers include Abishay Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Eng. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Next time on this program...
95% of nonprofits say that they need and want access to skilled volunteers, but they don't know where to go to find them.
Catch a Fire. It's like eHarmony for nonprofits. I'm Bob Moon. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like...
What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.